Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Hello and welcome in to Jayhawk Talk Radio here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. I'm Kevin Meckley. Andrew Payne right here across from me here in studio. Our dude Kyle Collier here working on a Sunday. Why are you here on a Sunday, Kyle? What are we doing here on a Sunday?
It's a holiday.
It's a holiday.
On most holidays, people don't work. On this holiday, we're working hard.
We put in the work.
Working hard.
Why? You might wonder, is the holiday he's talking about something to do with a leprechaun?
Nope.
No, it is not. It is Selection Sunday, one of the best days of the entire year, if you're a Jayhawk, most of the time. Because it means the start of March Madness, the real start of March Madness. We have a tournament bracket, folks. The bracket was revealed just 2 hours ago, live on CBS, and now we are reacting in pretty much real time here to what KU's draw is, what the bracket looks like, what the draw is for other Big 12 teams. We're going to have a ton of reaction on the show. We're going to hear from Bill Self and players. We're actually also going to be joined. This is going to be fun. We're going to be joined by Grant from the Samford Scoop.
Scoop.
The Scoop. You can't get a better guy than Grant from the Samford Scoop. That's what I've been told.
He's young. He's hungry. He's, put himself a nice little career together covering this program. Look at him maybe jump up to the next level.
He's got a podcast, you know? State of the Bulldogs, too. He not only does he have the Scoop, he has the podcast, too. We're going to be joined by him. There's probably no one better to preview the Samford game than Grant from the Samford Scoop.
And I need the Scoop.
We need the Scoop.
I don't want any Scoop three-pointers from the Bulldogs coming out there. We're going to get to the Bulldogs, but, you know, that's going to be good. And then, you know, in the second hour, Kevin, we're going to have our guy Brian Haney.
How about that?
Insider. I want to know from Brian what the real deal is. Because 5 o'clock hour, we learned the bracket. 6 o'clock hour, we learned kind of Bill Self's take. He did some interviews on ESPN Plus. We have some audio. We're going to play that. But in this hour, we've got it all. We're going to put it all together. We're going to hear from our Samford folks. We're going to hear from Brian Haney. By the end of this, maybe we'll come out feeling good.
I hope so. If I did a little vibes check on Twitter. This is the one thing I like to do when a bracket comes out. I ask KU fans, and I presume most of the few people that follow me are KU fans, I ask the question, what's the vibes check for first round matchup? Who wins, KU or Samford? 81% KU, Andrew.
Okay.
It's not bad.
Not terrible.
It's not bad.
Different year, a first round matchup at Kansas. You would expect that number to be pretty high.
Yeah, but this year is different on Twitter.
This year is different. This is pretty brutal.
And then I also ask, what are your takes or what your vibe check for all things equal? Do you like KU's draw or do you dislike? Or sorry, do you hate KU's draw? Two options. It was 78% like KU's draw.
Okay, so we're
and
about
most years. That's not true.
We're about 4 out of 5 people are feeling positive.
How about that?
And that is interesting. I think the negative voices do they speak a little bit louder.
Louder on Twitter. Yeah.
So, but let's do a vibe check.
Silent
here.
Silent vote.
We're the Jayhawk Talk Radio Show here. Let's do a vibe check. So let's talk Samford here on Thursday. Excuse me, got to get my mouth around this word.
Samford.
We've lost to a Buckyball.
Buckyball.
We've lost to a Stanford in the tournament. Now we've got a Samford. What is your thought on Samford? Because let's walk back. We thought we were going to be a 4 seed no matter what going into this Big 12 tournament this week. And so we had this terrible game against Cincinnati, which we won't talk about. But we thought we were going to be 4, right? And now we know we were trying to figure out what type of team would we not want to see. And I think that there were two that kept coming up. It was Charleston and it was Samford. Those were in our area. So now that we know that, Samford, you know, 3-point shooting team, turns you over, fast-paced. They play 10 guys. They play fast. It's a lot. That's kind of what we didn't want to see. But, Kevin, vibes check.
Vibes check.
Samford first, draw second.
Look, you're a 4 seed at the end of the day. At the end of the day, you're a 4 seed. You're going to play a 13. Did we get the 13 that I would prefer? No, we did not. But there's a few little things if you dig into Samford's stats, if you dig into their record, you dig into their profile, that give you a little bit of hope. That, you know, while it's a 13 seed that looks scary on paper, while it is a 13 seed that is only an 8.5-point underdog, and that number should shrink, would be my guess, especially after the reaction show on CBS puts a pretty big target on KU's back. Kyle, do you happen to have that right from the selection show? I'll tee it up for you. You know, they put the thing on the screen, they show the bracket, they show Kansas, they show Samford, and then here comes Seth Davis.
Yeah.
See if we got it here. It decided to buffer.
Buffering. We all feel that.
Everyone's got a little bit. It's Sunday. It's the computer's out drinking a green beer. Let us know if you get it. We'll figure it out.
But anyway, Kevin, we'll get to that Seth Davis reaction. And it's if you're listening to this, you probably know what it said. But for the record, we want to put it on there. But when he said that, I didn't necessarily have the reaction that a negative reaction. I was like, I'm glad he said that.
I'm glad Seth Davis feels that
I'm
way.
I'm glad he said that.
All right, we got it. Let's hear it.
Here we go.
Yeah, this is the part of the show where I light myself on fire. Because I've got McNeese over Gonzaga, and you ready? Samford takes down Kansas. You mentioned the injuries to Kansas. They were already not a deep team. Samford is an up-and-down team. They play 10 guys, and the game is in Salt Lake City, where altitude is a factor. We've got a potential matchup between Texas and Tennessee, where Rick Barnes, the Tennessee coach, used to coach. I think the dangerous team in this bracket is Creighton.
There we go.
They play at a slower tempo. Yeah. I think they can get by Tennessee in the Sweet 16.
Blah, blah, blah. So, a few things there to react for. First of all, the altitude.
Yeah.
We got the altitude play. Get over the altitude stuff. I'm not going to listen to anyone say altitude the rest of the week. Like, I don't want to hear that word once.
It's a fun little bit to grab onto.
I'm not
as
interested
a, in as a, like, oh, you know, oh, the Jayhawks don't play in altitude.
I'm just not interested.
They play in
this.
That low-level Midwest. I don't think it's – and Bill Self was immediate to react to that. And we're going to get to some Self audio in the next couple segments. But they asked him about altitude, and he's like, it's not even as high as Denver. And it's no Laramie. This is a guy who's played in some old whack games. Played some old, you know, games where he knows altitude, and he's been to Salt Lake before. We'll go to Provo next year.
He knows,
so I'm not too concerned
about
altitude.
Oh, and by the way, Homewood, Alabama – where Samford is based, we all know, very, very big, high altitude place there in Homewood, Alabama, right? They're playing the same spot, and by the way, they like to run. We don't really run. We don't want to run that much.
Yeah, if you want to slow down for us, that'd be great.
Slow it down, actually.
Samford, let's just slow down a little
so
bit.
So that's one thing he said. Then he also said that, you know, injuries, beat up, right? Beat up Kansas. Well, we heard Bill Self say a number of times, even before the selection show, that we're going to be at our best health we've been all season potentially at the start of this tournament. So, Seth, now come on, man, what do you got for us? You're saying that Sam is he just trying to do the I got to pick one here, like pick a fun one, or does he really think Samford's going to upset Kansas?
Well, he's trying to make good TV, and he's trying to on the fly pick some upsets. You know, you got to do that to make it fun.
It's going to be popular.
It's going to be very popular, especially with that big reaction he had. But I don't think that's the one. And certainly, you know, it wasn't the one that I would have picked if, like, okay, we're the four. What 13 do we want? If we pick of the litter. It's not the one I would pick, but I still think they're just a we've seen this team before. We saw this in BYU. They're a not as skilled BYU. I mean, they've got five guys who can shoot threes. They like to run. We've played this team before. I mean, that's the thing about the Big 12 is you can play all sorts of different styles and have to prepare for them. They're going to have to prepare for us.
That's true.
They have it that the one time this season that Samford has played anyone of note was Purdue, and they got blown out by 45.
It was more than that. I think it was like 50.
It was 98-45. So it was. It was. Yeah, you're right.
54 points. That's a lot of points.
53 points. So that was the first game of the season. So that's. It is an interesting thing. So they got to go from the other end. So I don't think that Kansas is going to have much difficulty with Samford. And so do I have that queasy spot in my stomach?
Of course I do. Of course.
Do I know that that matchup nightmare could come rearing its head? Sure. Do I know that Bill Self could be talking a little bit in front of his skis, they're talking above what he knows to be the truth about the health of the players?
Maybe.
maybe a little bit. Those are the things that make me nervous. But the matchup, I think this team can handle.
Let me just give you a live line, Andrew. It opened up at 8.5 points, as I mentioned. 8.5.
So it's only been
guess what
two
it is
hours. It's less than 2 hours. So it opened at 8.5.
And we both looked at each other and said something like, that's probably going to shrink.
It's probably going to shrink. So is it 7.5?
It's 7.5.
Oh, my goodness.
It's already coming down.
Wow.
If you like Kansas, wait. Hold on tight. Hold until you see the final line. But, yeah, I'm suspecting that's going to continue to drop, maybe down into the 6.5-point line.
All right, to continue our vibe checks here, you know, beyond Samford, let's talk about our little pod here. The other matchup is McNeese State with Will Wade as their new head coach. You know, Will Wade had some success with LSU, but also some troubles. So had to leave LSU, and now is at McNeese. Good coach, you know, was one of the chosen ones, one of the next few coaches that was supposed to be highly regarded. Then you've got Gonzaga, who has not necessarily had the season that they wanted to, and they end up as a 5 seed, probably overseeded. I think if you look at all the amateur bracketologists and professional ones, no one had Gonzaga as high, except for if you look at the KenPom number, they're 15th overall in KenPom. So you've got this up-and-coming team in McNeese, and you've got Gonzaga, traditional power out of the West Coast Conference, maybe not having the season they exactly wanted. But that could be the potential second-round matchup for the Jayhawks. What do you think about that matchup?
I love it, first of all. When it popped up, we looked at it. We saw Gonzaga first as the 5 seed, because that was the kind of early, you know, we hadn't seen the 4 yet. And we both went 5?
Yeah.
For Gonzaga?
We knew that it was coming up. Like we knew we were probably a 4. And so Gonzaga pops up, and we're like, oh, wow.
I wouldn't mind that 5.
That's high. And then McNeese pops up, and like, okay,
Will Wade,
give us this spot.
This couldn't be this.
Give the Jayhawks this Midwestern 4 in Salt Lake City.
And sure enough,
it happened.
It popped up. So in real time, we were pretty happy about this draw. Now, as we continue to dive deeper.
This is before we knew
here.
Samford was the opponent.
True.
But
yeah.
In terms of that placement, I think the Jayhawks fans have to be happy.
We're going to get to more on this, too, especially after the break. But we've got we're playing a two-game tournament here. That's what Bill Self always talks about. We don't look at the rest of the bracket. Of course, we're going to. But he doesn't, you know, when he talks about the way that he's preparing, he calls it a two-game tournament, right? Go in two games, and then you try to go in two more games, right? That's how you play this tournament. So we will be talking about both of those games. But yeah, I don't hate it, Andrew.
Okay, Kevin, we've got a big show here on Jayhawk Talk Radio. Okay, so we're looking at brackets pop up. We're looking at predictions. We're looking at everybody picking their final fours. We'll probably do that by the end of this show, but we've got our guy from the Samford Scoop coming up in a couple segments of 7:30. We've got Brian Haney coming on. We're going to talk Kansas. We're going to talk Samford. We're going to talk the rest of the bracket. There's a whole other world out there in terms of teams. We're going to help you pick your teams. We're going to help you maybe make some bets. We're going to get inside the mind, get inside the locker room of the Kansas Jayhawks with Brian Haney. This is big show, Kevin.
Big show. Love it.
All right, stay tuned. If you want to make some good picks, if you want to get some good insight on the Kansas Jayhawks, here you are, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
It's that time of year when you hear this song all March long. Woo! Send the tinglies down my back, Andrew. We're back on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got Kansas as a 4 seed. Playing Samford. Playing the Bulldogs from Samford. We're going to hear from Bill Self here. See what he had to say about the draw. About the altitude. About getting the swag back. Kyle, maybe run that for us. We'll probably react here in real time. We might have you pause it as we go. We buffering some more on a Sunday. That's what we do on Sunday. We buffer.
A week off before you play another game. What does the preparation look like before you guys get ready to travel to Salt Lake?
Well, the last couple of days, you know, obviously we played on Wednesday and then we took Thursday off and then have practiced basically with most of our players Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then we're gonna keep practicing. But of the practices that we had, our guys that are playing the majority of minutes have had all had extra days off. So we give, like, Hunter's day off was today, Johnny's day off was today, Juan and KJ, I give them 2 days in a row off. And so we'll practice Monday and Tuesday and leave Tuesday. And in the next 48 hours, we need to figure out how to defend the arc, though, because Buckyball will be coming to Salt Lake trying to shoot a ton of threes.
You guys, 5 years ago, played in Salt Lake, so you know what may be the conditions as far as altitude, how that will affect your team. How do you prepare for that?
I don't think you do. I'll be honest with you. The more you talk about it, the more it gets in people's head. Everybody's going to play on the same court, and I'll be honest with you. Maybe it did affect us. I don't remember Salt Lake elevation being, you know, it's not like Boulder, or it's not like Laramie, I don't think. Now, I could be wrong. I was thinking it was closer to 35 or 4,000. Is that right, 4,000 square feet, which is a big difference between that and Denver. Mm-hmm. So, it may have an impact, but we won't even talk about that.
We ain't going to talk about that. I'm done with altitude talk already. I'm just done. Get rid of all the altitude questions.
Salt Lake's a little bit bigger than 45,000 square feet. I think that's yeah, the elevation.
Well, the fact that he was aware, at least sort of what the elevation was.
They had been there before. They had done that. But let's talk about the first question. It's about days off. This team has not been going hard at it every day since Wednesday, since the Cincinnati game. This is a team that's had a long, grueling Big 12 schedule. And so it's interesting to hear him talk about, Hunter's day off was today. KJ and Juan got 2 days off. And so I think he's preparing for this team, you know, not that they need to develop skills, but they just need to get healthy to play in this tournament.
And he mentioned Buckyball. Buckyball was mentioned, and I like that he already knows the nickname for Buckyball, which is the way that, based on Coach McMillan there. Bucky McMillan, yes, excuse me. They run and gun, they press every possession, they play 10 guys, they shoot a lot of threes. That's Buckyball! And he mentions right off the bat, we got to figure out how to defend the arc. All right, let's see what else he says.
Have a week off before you play another game.
Everybody's going to play on the same court. And
the totality of your resume, the teams that you've played, the strength of schedule, including two overall number one seeds, how has that prepared your team for this NCAA tournament?
Well, I hope it has. I hope our league has, too. You know, the league is so good. And, you know, here we are, you know, BYU such a bad loss, and they're a six seed. And everybody thought they'd be a five seed. I mean, so there weren't bad losses in our league. And Samford, to me, hopefully it's prepared us for it, but they're good. You know, if you look at the 13 seeds across the bracket, I think their net is 74, and it goes from like 74 to 102 to 120 to 130. So I would say they're by far the strongest of the 13 seeds. And so I don't think anybody did us any favors by any stretch. But we just got to prepare and get our minds right to go win a two-game tournament. And that's how we've always approached it. I think that's how most teams probably approach it, and that's certainly what we intend to do.
As you get ready for the NCAA tournament, what would you say is the identity of this team?
Well, I think it's, you know, it's ever-changing. I think it can be, you know, the people won't like it because of the score, but, God, did we try hard and compete defensively against Cincinnati. I mean, where the ball didn't bounce our way, and, you know, you got one starter goes 9 of 14. The rest of the guys go 8 of 39. I mean, we couldn't buy a basket. We were actually trying too hard, I think, in so many ways. But I do think that in some ways, through some adversity, we've probably gotten tougher. I think that our half-court defense has gotten better. Offensively has been where we've labored. You know, when other teams have played well offensively against us, we've had a hard time keeping up when they make threes. Mm-hmm. We've been outscored in our losses. I think we've been outscored anywhere between 15 and 30 points from beyond the arc. Mm-hmm. I could be off a little bit, but I think that's basically accurate, which that's a lot of twos you got to make up for. Granted, it's sometimes it's easier to defend the arc than it is actually make more threes, so we need to do a good job with that.
So a couple things there. First of all, Andrew, he mentions that the 13 seed, Samford, is the by far the strongest of the 13 seeds. That was his quote. By far the strongest. I don't think anybody did any favors by any means. We got to go win a two-game tournament. That's the quote. Let me just give a little something to back that up. If you look at just the betting lines. Let's see. The next closest is like 11.5. So there's 4 points there right there you can point to. KenPom, the net, everything that you see on the 13 line, 100%. There's a little bit to back that up. Now, Bill Self always says stuff like that in this press conference. You know, we didn't get any favors, right? But I think there's something to back that up. What do you think?
I think there's something to back that up, too. I mean, in terms of KenPom, you know, the nearest Big 12 team is, you know, they're a little bit below K-State. And so, you know, you've seen this Kansas team lose to K-State, you know, this season. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that this team could lose. But you know, I think that they do have a challenge here. And one other thing I want to point out, Kevin, is they did ask the question, you know, what is this team's identity? Which seems like a throwaway question. It's just like a random question.
I was intrigued.
An interviewer would ask. Question. But I don't know if I knew the answer. Certainly at the beginning of the year, there was some kind of identity that sort of developed. And then into the Big 12 season, I'm not sure we had one. And we certainly haven't had any discernible identity over the last, you know, 10 games.
You know? Well, did you hear what he said?
You know, he said defense.
He said defense. He said our half-court defense is one thing. He said offensively is where we've labored. But then he kind of went on to sort of excuse away a couple games. Did you hear that? You know, it's just kind of interesting. This is a different Bill. Obviously, it's a different season altogether, being, you know, a four seed and losing double-digit games and things like that. It's a different season altogether. But you hear a different Bill Self in this sort of question than you have in other years, where he'd say things like, God, we're soft and we can't make shots, we can't guard anybody. Like, he's not saying any of that stuff. He's sort of providing excuses for the team, almost like he has to kind of build them up a little bit. I think that's kind of where his mind is right now, which is probably fair.
And I don't know if you have this, Kyle, do you have the injury quote? Yeah, well, I'm going to let you find that, Kyle. But in the meantime, I think that it all comes down to what the identity is, where the team is. Ultimately, it comes down to the health of Kevin McCullough and Hunter Dickinson. Because if those two guys are able to play at least, you know, 90%, this team is going to be a force in this tournament. But if they're not, they will almost be an easy out.
Probably.
And not necessarily Samford. But, you know, if they get by Samford, then in the second round, you can't maybe put all your chips there. If those two guys aren't ready to play, it really comes down to those two guys.
Well, let's hear that last the last part of this presser. Do you have it, Kyle? The last question, I think, is about getting swag back, because this might help answer some of that.
We need swag back.
You want your team, you want the players to get their swag back, to get their confidence back. What does that look like to you?
It looks like Houston. It looks like Baylor. It looks like Texas. It looks like Connecticut. It looks like Tennessee. You know, there's a lot of things that that we've done this season that when we've been good, we've been really good. And we've done some things here since we've been back to hopefully help with that. But the bottom line is, you know, Matthew Stafford, we watched something with him today as a group. You know, the Rams won the Super Bowl and didn't win a game in November. You know, now, granted, we haven't played great. What are we, 4-5 our last games or whatever? But, you know, against good teams. But bottom line is that, you know, it's certainly, you know, putting it together at the right time. And now's the right time. And we'll have three good practices, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, with our full complement of guys. At least we hope so. You know, Hunt will definitely be practicing. He's been practicing up until now, just no contact, but we're going to start that tomorrow. But I think that'll change the swag a lot when we have him back.
Change the swag a lot.
when we have Hunt back. It'll change the swag. And you know, when I think of swag, I think of Matthew Stafford taste.
Yeah. Like, oh.
What was that?
Where are you going with this? Where are you going with Matthew Stafford?
Was that
Stafford?
A Brady Morningstar poll? Who pulled that one?
I think the Kansas City Chiefs this season is more
That's
apt.
A better one.
That's a better analogy.
You should have gone Chiefs, Bill.
Get hot at the right time.
Yeah.
Come on.
Stafford.
What are we talking about? Matthew Stafford.
But
don't
swagger.
Matthew Stafford
swagger is important, and I think that Bill Self brought Hunter Dickinson to this team for March swagger. That is what he needed, and we'll see if we get that on Thursday.
That's all we need. We just need some swagger back. That's it. That's all we need.
All right. When we come back, we are going to be talking to a Buckyball insider right there from the Sanford Scoop. I'm just trying to learn all these news.
You're going
to
have it by the end of the show.
Yeah, the Sanford Scoop. We're going to get the full scoop on the Sanford Bulldogs right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in, Jayhawk Talk Radio on Sports Radio 810 WHB. KU is a 4 seed in this here March Madness tournament. But let's not bury the lead, Andrew. The Sanford Bulldogs are back in the tournament for the first time in 24 years. They were winners of the Southern. Most wins in program history. And Andrew, I've mostly exhausted my knowledge of the Bulldogs now, so let's bring in our guy Grant Gardner of the Sanford Scoop and the State of the Bulldogs podcast to help us out. Grant, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How you feeling?
Yeah, what's going on, guys? Thanks for having me. Gosh, that music just means it's March, right, coming around. Yeah, awesome seeing Sanford in the tournament, as you said, for the first time since 2000.
Yeah, so tell us about Buckyball. You know, Bill Self had mentioned in his press conference afterwards, I think it was mentioned on the CBS broadcast, it's a unique style of play or style of play that has had some success for the Bulldogs. So what is Buckyball?
Buckyball is a high pace, very fast. They've been in the top 10 of the best of tempo and Kenpom over the whole year, really. So they throw a lot of guys at you, too. This team is super deep, plays at least 10 to 11, sometimes 12 in their rotation, and then get up and down the floor super fast. They'll chuck some threes up if you let them, but they can also do well in half court. So Buckyball is just pretty much fast pace, very. They'll push you 40 minutes, and they'll get you full court, too, while they're doing it.
And you mentioned the full court. They will. It is a pretty high octane defense. Turn you over. They are picking up full court most of the time, right?
Oh yeah, all the time, pretty much. Unless the matchup says differently later in the game, or they switch to zone, yeah, they're picking you up 40 minutes.
So there you go. That is new for we haven't played that kind of style much. West Virginia maybe a little bit back in the day, and we saw a little bit. But this will be a new style for us to play against, which will be fascinating too. Tell us a little bit more about some of the guys we need to know about.
Well, the first guy that really jumps off the page is one of the most accrued players in the entire country is big man Australian big man Achor had 25 points and 9 boards in the SoCon final, had a double-double in the semifinal. So he's the guy that's really expanded his game. He can shoot the three as well. He can ball handle it like a guard. He can get to the rim and get to the foul line. So that's one guy to look out for. Also another guy, kind of senior leader of this group. He's been through it all. He's a Birmingham guy. He was a transfer from Akron. Jermaine Marshall, he's kind of the heart and soul of this team. He had 23 points along with 8 boards in the final as well. And just played 21 minutes. So it just talks about the impact he has on this group. And he'll get you. And he'll pick up full court, he'll get after you, and he'll fight anybody on the court. It doesn't matter who it is. He'll let you know that he's here to stay, and he'll pick you up for 40, and he's ready to go, and no matter the matchup. So those are really the two guys that really make Sanford go, and a host of guys they can really throw at you.
Yeah, so what is the mood in Birmingham? You make the tournament for the first time in quite a long time, and you have to go up against Kansas. Is the mood more, hey, glad we made the tournament, or is the mood like, hey, let's go out and get a win?
The mood, it's probably a little bit of both, here to go get a win. If you talk to Bucky McMillan, who I got a chance to talk to after the announcement, he's ready to go. It doesn't matter who's lining up on the other side. These guys are ready to go and get a couple wins in Salt Lake at least. And I was in downtown Homewood, which is just outside of Birmingham where Sanford is. At the selection show party, I was also just seeing the crowd show up and really the city show up for this group in ways that's never been done before on this campus, as you mentioned, going back to 2000. So I think the overall vibe of this group is, hey, we're here, we're in it, we might as well pick up a few games and get some wins while we're at it.
So the just back to the players a little bit. One of the things that jumped off the page was the relative height of the team. I think I read that something like 340th in terms of height, but 349th. There it is, 349th in average height. You do let opponents shoot nearly 50% from two, and obviously rebounding is probably something that, you challenge on. Talk to me just a little bit about that, and what are some keys to the games where Samford has struggled? What does that look like?
We mentioned right there at the end the rebounding. That's really one of the things that this team struggled on earlier on the year, is allowing their opponents to get a lot of offensive boards, which obviously leads to more possession, especially in a conference like the Southern Conference, where a lot of teams shoot threes and they'll put it up and go up in after 40 minutes. So that's something that we've seen Samford have trouble rebounding. But you know, the other side of Buckyball, when you got these guys going up in that 40 minutes, you've got to have guards that can play, guards that can move. So they got some small guards, some guards they really look towards to play this kind of style, fast-paced offensive defense. So those are kind of the two things to mention. One would be a bad matchup for Samford going against a good rebounding team. And two, if they have the link like Kansas does with Furphy and KJ Adams and a couple other guys, that's something to watch for going forward on Thursday.
So when it comes to shooting three-pointers, is the three-pointer a pivotal element of Buckyball, or is it just a natural consequence of the way the style is played? I mean, are they on the floor looking to get a three-pointer on every possession?
I think it's a little bit of both. Over the Southern Conference tournament, the last three games, they kind of won it without shooting a lot of threes. They only made six in the semifinal, made five in the final, and they still found a way to win. So I think it's just a matter of the offense working towards and see if they can get threes. They're not really hunting them on every possession. But if you get a quick bucket on one end, they're going to go right back on the other end. It doesn't matter where it is. They're going to get down the court and put up some threes. So it's a little bit of both. I say they don't look towards it that much, but it's still a big part of what they want to do.
And who's the X factor for Samford? Who's the player that's going to kind of drive the outcome one way or the other? I know you go 10 deep, but there's got to be the one guy is kind of the X factor. You go, well, that guy had a great game, and that's a good reason we won.
Yeah, I'd say one guy behind this, too, is Jaden Campbell, the senior from Ontario, Canada. He can really shoot from the outside, and Samford's really won a lot of their games when he's gone off. In the regular season against ETSU, he had 28 points, was a big reason why they won that one. So if he's getting going, he had 11 points in the final and made three of Samford's six threes in the final. So if he can get going, if he gets off on the outside, watch out, because this team is just on a different level. When Jaden Campbell goes, they can shoot it from the outside. He's also a good ISO player as well. He can get you down to paint and has a nice little hook for a guy who's 6'4", 6'5". So he would be one guy to watch for, Jaden Campbell out there on the perimeter.
I love it. Okay, so if the Samford Bulldogs were to get a victory on Thursday against the Kansas Jayhawks, what is the key to the game? What is the pathway that would have to happen for the win to happen?
Dickinson and McCullough don't play? No, but it will be interesting to see with those two guys out. I'm an Oklahoma fan, so it's kind of funny just seeing you guys beat up on OU for the last, whatever, 20, 25 years or whatever, then Samford gets a chance to find a way to go against you guys. I thought for sure I was done when OU was moving on to the SEC.
Can't get rid of us.
Unbelievable. I can't find a way to get rid of you. I was talking about that with my brother the other day. But back to Samford, I think if they get hot from three and if they crash the boards, that's one thing you saw over the Southern Conference tournament, and Bucky McMillan talked about that too. The Chora just looked like a man possessed out there saying that rebound is mine. So if he kind of plays to that same level, and if Samford can rebound bigger than their sizes, I think that'll be a big matchup, especially when you got, like I already mentioned, Furphy and McCullough. McCullough plays on the other side. So if Samford can rebound the ball well and then get hot from the outside and make anywhere from 9 to 12 threes somewhere in that range, I think they can find a way to get it done.
Samford does seem like a hot pick for an upset, hot upset special pick. You hear, I heard Seth Davis on the broadcast mention it. You look on some brackets already, you see a lot of Samford love. We've seen the line shrink from 8.5 to 7.5 in just an hour.
Okay.
What's your take on this game? What's your prediction as you're sitting here today?
I think probably still just from watching Kansas, but they obviously have that championship DNA, and you know Bill Self, one of the best coaches in the country, is going to have them ready no matter whatever the availability of Dickinson and McCullough is. So I think Samford, I probably get so late to get close late, but I think Kansas this size and maybe just would be too much, especially if a Chora gets in foul trouble like he is prone to do over in the year. So I think Samford will keep it close, but I think Kansas may or may not find a way to get it done late.
Grant, thank you for coming on. Can you tell everybody if they want to get prepped for Samford, if they wanted to get the extra, and this, if Kansas Jayhawk fans want the extra, they want all the information, where can they find what you're doing for the team to get them caught up?
Yeah, you can find me, as you said, at the top, Samford Scoop on Twitter and Instagram. We also have a website along with our podcast called stateofthebulldogs.com where we kind of break down all things Samford. And we're kind of the only outside media that really covers Samford, along with another guy called Birmingham Sports who runs a Twitter account as well. So we kind of try to bring it to the fan and try to give an outside perspective to something that hasn't really happened on Samford's campus. You can find us at stateofthebulldogs.com, and then State of the Bulldogs is the podcast as well. You can find that on Apple and Spotify.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, Grant. Good luck to the Bulldogs, and good luck to you on Thursday.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks. All right, Kevin, lots to unpack there. I feel more knowledgeable about the
Grant
Bulldogs.
Grant was great. Yeah, he knows his stuff.
I think that the connection we need to draw here, Press Virginia.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's what kept going in my brain.
I don't think this is BYU. I think this is Press Virginia.
Or is it VCU?
Oh, that makes my stomach hurt a little bit more, Kevin. Oh, is this Havoc? Is this Press Virginia?
It feels kind of Havoc-y.
Or is this BYU? I don't know. We're going to unpack this. That was a great interview from Grant. I think that
very helpful.
We got a lot of that. Okay, we're going to
come
back.
No one else, by the way, brought the Samford Scoop on tonight. We got the exclusive Samford Scoop. I don't know if that's true, but
well, it's
we're
interesting
say
that there's not much coverage.
You know?
It's like a couple guys just have to figure it out on their own how
love
to do it.
Hey, you got to do what you got. I respect the heck out of it.
All right, we're gonna come back. We're gonna talk some betting lines. Maybe I've got some more Samford takes. We're gonna close out some Samford takes. We're gonna talk about some betting lines. At the top of the hour, we're gonna talk the rest of the bracket. Like we've just talked this tiny 2-team tournament in the Midwest. We're going to expand our view. We're going to look to the rest of the tournament, and then we're going to have Brian Haney on a little bit later. But that's right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in. Jayhawk Talk Radio on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We've been talking a lot about the men, but how about the Kansas women, Andrew? We got our Kansas women in an 8 seed facing number 9 seed Michigan. Should be a good one. If they win, they'd probably go against 1 seed USC. So they avoid South Carolina. That's a win.
I think there's a couple buzzsaws out there. I think if you avoid Iowa, you avoid South Carolina, and I think that's if you
they can go beat them. They can go beat USC.
No.
Who's a USC?
Come on,
they can go beat
we
them.
We got that. We'll so keep go an eye beat
Michigan.
Well.
Go beat Michigan and USC. Talk about some
2-team
tournament. Yeah,
2-team
right.
tournament. Michigan USC.
I like it. I hope we see that. That'd be a blast. So Andrew, we're back in. We just heard from Grant from the Samford Scoop, who gave us the rundown on what to expect on Thursday, facing off against a team who sounds like goes 10 to 12 deep, runs like heck. Havoc defense, picks you up on both sides of the court, can't rebound, that's a win, shoots a lot of threes, makes a lot of threes, got a few X factors. What else did I miss there?
Well, I think that the real point is this is a Press Virginia offense. And so I thought that the player of the game or the key to the game for the Jayhawks was going to be, you know, the health of Kevin McCullough and how well is Hunter going to play? But I think ultimately the key to the game is going to be Dwan Harris. Because in a game like this, you have to have a floor general. And I think that in games in the past, teams that have wanted to run with Kansas, teams and this season, I mean, as early as, you know, a couple weeks ago, teams that wanted to run with Kansas have backed off on that threat. Because this team may be, you know, for 4-year seniors and 5-year seniors, they're not that young, but they're kind of the old men of the Big 12 in terms of a couple of these guys. They can still run, but this team knows how to go up against that. And with Harris, especially with Johnny Furphy, with KJ Adams, who like to play transition, you're challenging an incredibly talented team who could be faster, who could be more skilled than you at the high level to a track meet. I think I'll take that.
You're going to take that? Well, let me just give you one little counterpoint. Kansas is 2-4 against teams with a top 25 turnover rate defense this year.
Okay, that's what I mean. That's it. This is a Dwan Harris game.
This is a Dwan Harris game. We need Dwan to be great. We need him to be great. He's not been great the last 2 weeks. We need him to be great. Not just against Samford. We need him to be great for anything this postseason.
If this team has any possibility of doing anything special, and I don't know what that is for you, this is a special season because we did X, but whatever your outcome is, the answer to that question is Dwan Harris has to be great.
Yeah. Well, here's a couple more notes about Samford since we're chatting Samford. They did put up 134 on some dudes this year. They put up 134 points on VMI. Now, VMI ain't great. Like, let's not get it twisted. VMI ain't great. But they also put up 128 on some dudes, too. 118 on some other dudes. 102 again on VMI. Poor VMI.
Oh, man.
And 101 against North Carolina A&T. All I'm saying is they got 134 in their arsenal. Now they gave up 96 in that game to VMI, who ranks 354th in KenPom. So this is a good just kind of snapshot. How many times do you think VMI put up 96 points this year? Probably not very many if they're the 354th best in KenPom. That is, by the way, pretty much last. And so it's just kind of interesting to see that now they're averaging like 86 points on the season, which makes sense when you put up 134 and 128 a couple times. But these guys obviously want to go up and down. Tempo, tempo, tempo. That is number one. High tempo, going to keep throwing dudes at you. Now, we talked a little bit about that game, Andrew, that Purdue game, where they lost 98-45. Again, that is one where Purdue made like 15 threes, and Samford was 5 of 31. 5 of 31. So basically they were taken early in the shot clock, like they do, and missing. And that is how you lose by 50 points and to a team that obviously can put it up. So it's just kind of an interesting thing. The range of outcomes in a Samford game seems wild because you have so many possessions, assuming that they play to that pace against us, which I think, to your point, is a question. Will be an interesting question.
Yeah, in terms of pace, I'm looking at number of possessions played. They have played in a couple games that have almost reached 100 possessions. That VMI game is 95. They have a couple other. They had an Alabama A&M game where they won 118-91, 96 possessions. And just to give you some perspective, the highest number of possessions, you know, we're 60s. We're 60s and Oof. 70s. The highest number of possessions we had all year was against Wichita State, and that was 79.
Wow. Different style.
At Kentucky, actually. Kentucky had 83.
Okay.
And that was a high-scoring game. That was 89-84.
Yeah, that was.
So expect a lot more opportunity. If the ball's not going down for the Jayhawks, the ball's not going to go down a lot of times. There's going to be a lot of opportunity because I don't think this is your traditional wait till the end of the shot clock and shoot a three-pointer or plotting. This is a run as fast as you can. If the break leads to a three-pointer, great. If it doesn't, leads to a quick bucket, even better. I mean, this is Press Virginia.
Let me throw another one at you. Samford ranks 126th in defense. Now, there's a few. Let me just throw a couple teams who are in that similar area. Kentucky, for instance, 123rd. We scored how many points against them? 89, 90?
89.
Another one, Oklahoma State. We scored 90 and 83 points against them. And then UMKC is 136th. We scored 88 points against. So that's 88, 89, 90, and 83, which we haven't scored feels like in the 80s in a long time. But the point is that against teams that are a little higher in the defense efficiency, we've had some success. And that might be what we are faced up against here with a ton of possessions. So can KU cash in on enough baskets in transition, get those high percentage twos to counterbalance what likely is a number of three-pointers going up by Belmont?
Since February.
By the Bulldogs, excuse me.
Since February, the Jayhawks have scored over 80 twice. K-State scored 90.
Uh-huh.
And then
with overtime.
Texas. We scored 86.
Hmm.
No. The 90 was the one at home. The senior.
Oh, yeah.
So that's since February. So it's it'll be a different style of game. But, like, the K-State and Texas games are the model for how this team has success. It is possible. Bill Self, and I don't know if this was in the quote that we played today, but one of, the key takeaway, I think, from his quotes are, when we've been good, we've been really good. And I think that that's what we need to find. This Jayhawk needs to find that level. You know, he rattled off that list of teams. What does the swagger look like?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Houston.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Texas. It looks like K-State. It looks like UConn.
UConn, Tennessee, Baylor.
Like those are the games where they have
had the swagger.
They have looked like they can, you know, they can be a Final Four team. And then you have games like Cincinnati, games like Houston in Houston, where it looks like they shouldn't even, you know, belong in the tournament. There's obviously health has a lot to do with that. So, I mean, that's something that I think I'll be monitoring the most over the next couple days is the progress and the health of those key individuals. Hunter and Kevin. That's it.
Huge. That's huge. Obviously, that's the difference. If they're not playing, I mean, this is a little nervous. if they're not playing, I would maybe hustle before that Samford line gets any shorter than 7.5 points. But if they are playing, and it sounds like Hunt's going to play. He said he's been practicing for 2 days. He gets contact for sure tomorrow. Unless he has a setback, obviously, that would be problematic. And then Kevin, he said, quote, I haven't seen him. You know, that's a little concerning, but he said he hadn't seen him. That is a wild card to this game, because I do think we need Kevin. I mean, at the end of the day, we need both those guys.
You know, ultimately, I'm probably more concerned about Hunter's injury. Bill Self seems more upbeat about that injury.
For sure.
Whereas Kevin's injury just needs time.
It's just the same thing.
It just needs time.
Yeah,
and so he's got an extra 10 days now since he's had to play, and quite a long time. I mean, he skips the Big 12 tournament completely, gets that extra time. And so, actually, 12 days, I mean, from that Houston game. So it's, he gets another couple weeks. I mean, so he has this injury, you know, end of January. Kind of should start to be, you know, we're 6-7 weeks into this injury. You know, I think he's got to be at least better. Feeling better.
Well, we should be able to rebound. That's a win against Samford. Should be able to rebound. They don't rebound. That's a win. And we should be able to run with them as long as we are willing to do so. And or maybe they decide. You heard from Grant. He said something like, they press. They press like crazy unless the matchup says something otherwise or the game situation says something otherwise. So do they come in and do what they've done all year? Do they go full buckyball against KU? Do they try to turn us over? Do they try to turn us up? Or do they do something a little different? That'll be an interesting question.
Yeah, who dictates the terms, who dictates the pace, I think will largely determine the outcome.
Hunter could have 30 points in this game.
He could have 30 rebounds in this game.
He could have 30
rebounds. What's more likely, 30 points or 30 rebounds?
Honestly, I kind of like the overs on whatever he has as long as he's playing. I think this could be a huge Hunter game. And I think he was on to something when he said try to get some of their guys in foul trouble. Hunter certainly has the ability to do that. So does KJ, and that will probably be an interesting piece for the game as well.
All right, hour number two coming up. We've got Brian Haney on the mic coming to us. Maybe we'll get inside the locker room, get himself Bill Self's head, and then we're gonna get to the bigger tournament itself. So that's right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Dang it, Kyle. I don't want to hear this song. I'm not a fan. I'm just not a fan. I don't like the song. That's it. I'm going to die on this vine.
Today, I'm a fan.
You're a fan? All right. One day of the year. This day is fine. I don't want to hear it anymore. Unless KU wins.
All right.
In which case,
yeah, it's your favorite
play it
song
forever.
That's ever.
Yeah, it's the best. It's just an overrated song, in my opinion. Let's talk brackets. It's bracket time. We have a bracket in front of us. We spent the entire first hour talking KU's path, KU's little mini two-game tournament, reacting.
We kept previewing that we wanted to talk about the brackets and some betting stuff, but we just really wanted to talk Stanford Bulldogs.
I want to know more about
Stanford
the Bulldogs. We're all learning.
But yeah, we wanted to talk some Bulldogs, and there's a lot to get out of that. And we're going to go back to the Bulldogs. We're going to go back, but we want to talk some other stuff. Before we get there, some housekeeping. The times have been announced for the games for Thursday and Friday. Well, for Tuesday and Wednesday as well. But the Kansas Jayhawks will play at 8:55 on TBS on Thursday. For those who care, the broadcasting announcers are Brad Nessler and then Jacobson is the sideline reporter, and then Haywood. Don't know who those Jacobson I know, but... So Brad Nessler, 8:55 TBS.
Okay.
We're getting a primetime game. I think that they did that on purpose. I think there's a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah.
Some the betting public. It is a blue blood team, Kevin. We do draw some eyeballs.
Yeah, I
maybe not for the right reasons this year.
I say the longer we can wait to play the game, the better. The more, because you know what, that extra 6 hours might just be the reason Kevin McCullough plays. Just that extra little rest. If we had that 9 o'clock game, oh boy, I'm not sure. Just go to the end of the day, give me the very last game. I love it. I love it. I'm good with this. I'm good with this. The only thing I don't love is the last time we played an 8:30 tip, it didn't go very well, and that was earlier in the week. But that's okay. We'll see how it goes.
We're used to it.
Yeah,
we've got that built into our blood. All right, Kevin, we're gonna take a peek. We're gonna step away from the Jayhawks for just a couple minutes before we get to Brian Haney later on in the hour. But we're gonna talk about the bracket and just kind of how you think this is gonna lay out. So I've just put together a couple questions for you to kind of see if you're going with conventional wisdom or how you think this whole the rest of this tournament is gonna play out. So the number one overall team is the UConn Huskies, the reigning and defending champions. I have taken a little bit of perusal since we've been on the air here and sort of seen what the national media folks are doing, who they're picking, who their Final Four is, who their finalists, who their champion is.
Sure.
And it seems like everybody's picking the Huskies.
Hmm.
Are you picking the Huskies?
You know, I have not filled out technically my bracket yet, but you gotta like their draw. I have heard a little chatter, though, in the UConn universe. They're not terribly excited about their draw. They got Auburn, who's a tough four, and then one of the stories of the postseason so far, Iowa State is there, too. Some people thought Iowa State might even be a dark horse for a one seed. Negative. They end up as the, I guess, what appeared to be the worst two seed. Is that how that works? If they ended up or somewhere in there, they're definitely not the best two seed, and that puts them at the two seed in the East, potentially facing up against UConn in an Elite Eight game, which would be a blast if they get there. And that, you know, like I said, I think UConn's got a tricky draw if they even getting past a kind of a difficult Auburn team, as we've seen.
You know, per bracketing principles, you don't necessarily have to line up the number one overall with the eight overall, so the one and the two.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that. I think per bracketing principles, the one can't play the five, but the one can play the six, the one can play the seven. But in this case, they did have Iowa State as the eight overall, the eighth overall team, which is a little shocking. I thought they would have been in contention. But it seems like they definitely had Tennessee, they had Arizona and Marquette over Iowa State in this overall seeding.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, I don't know. I would not characterize UConn as a loser in this bracket setup. I think they're going to be just fine, but they are a little nervous, it sounds like.
Couple other things to mention out of the East Regional is this regional is chock full of conference tournament champions.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got UConn, who won the Big East. You have Auburn, won the SEC. You have Iowa State, who won the Big 12. And then I'm missing one, Illinois, who won the Big Ten. So four of the big boy, six big boy conferences now? Four of the six big boy conference tournament champions reside in this East Regional. And that being said, I still think that UConn is the overwhelming favorite to come out of this East.
Yep, I think that's right. Watch out for Florida Atlantic, though. Watch out for Florida Atlantic.
Oh, if it's Florida Atlantic and UConn in the second round, talk about eyeballs. Like, there will be a lot of people who are tuning into that one. That is made for TV. One other thing before we move out of the East here is we got to talk about Omaha.
Mm.
Omaha, it's going to be some... There's going to be some dogfights.
There's
going
to be a lot going on in Omaha.
There's going to be a lot. I mean, this is a region, or this is a pod that we kind of wanted. We love traveling up to Omaha.
Yeah.
We love playing there. Lots of fans travel. I go up to Omaha. But didn't get there this year. But we're looking at who's going to be there. BYU always travels well. Okay,
sure.
They're the six in that. They always travel well. They've got folks come from everywhere. Illinois, close-ish. Just got to drive across... Got to drive across to Iowa. But then here's where it gets interesting. You've got Drake as a 10 seed, and if Drake beats Washington State, could face off against Iowa State. So teams that are located, you know, what, 20 miles from each other, 15 miles from each other, could be meeting in Omaha. That place will be packed. And certainly if you're looking for maybe the hottest ticket, it's not going to be out there in some east, you know, coast city. It's not going to be, you know, in the West Coast. I think the hottest ticket may be in Omaha.
Yeah, let's not forget that T.J. Otzelberger was the South Dakota State head coach. 2016 to 2019, his assistant took over. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on there. These teams know each other. There could be some potential matchups there. Could be a lot of fun. And all those KU fans who bought up those tickets, assuming that they might be going to Omaha and maybe book those hotels, you might be able to get some money back for those.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to give you two things. A dark horse to look for, maybe a dark horse betting team to pick, or a dark horse team to maybe make the Sweet 16, make the Elite Eight.
Who you got?
I might say Iowa State to come out of it. I don't think that they're necessarily dark horse, but I think that they would match up okay with UConn, and they're kind of a steamroller right now. Buzzsaw, I mean, I think I'm going against the grain because everybody's picking UConn. Give me Iowa State.
That would, and we're just talking the East, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take Illinois.
Also Buzzsaw. Played very well today. Played very well, you know, the past month.
Can get past BYU.
Killed it in the Big Ten tournament. BYU could be interesting as well. We've seen how well they've played at Allen Fieldhouse. If those shots are going in, they can beat anybody. All right, Kevin, we're going to move down to – let's move to the South. This is Houston's. So Houston plays Iowa State yesterday, Saturday. Big 12 tournament, gets walloped.
Mm-hmm.
Lose by 28. I don't think I would have predicted that. Now, I could have seen the Cyclones winning. I don't think I could have ever predicted the Cyclones winning by that much against this team. I've watched Houston play a lot this year. They kill people.
It was so
weird.
They
destroy people. And so that was very shocking. However, I think they bounce back. I don't know if there's any big storylines that I've clung to here other than, you know, Tyler Kolek at Marquette. He's not healthy, I don't think that they're going to go all that far. Big 12 teams in here. We've got Texas Tech and Houston. Texas Tech is the sixth seed, and obviously Houston's the one. So a couple ones I just want to point out. Duke and Vermont. Duke's the 4. Vermont's the 13. Kind of pick a little Upset Central here. Upset City. I'm going to take Vermont.
Okay.
Now, maybe I'm just looking for a 13 over a 4, and I'm not taking the 13 over the 4.
You don't want to take ours? Yeah.
But I think I have been on this program, not on the radio, but this program between you and I, and I have correctly picked Duke up to upsets multiple times.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to call my shot here.
I like it. I got no beef with that at all. I will say Duke did a players-only meeting recently. After losing, that's what I heard.
It's usually not good.
I heard a players-only meeting happen, so that would just I'm just letting you know that. I don't know if that changes anything for you.
When people are having players-only meetings, it means things are not going very
that's
well.
Fair.
So this only encourages me to make
it.
That pick.
Just want to make sure.
One other thing I want to throw out at you, Kevin. I'm really intrigued and excited by Nebraska here.
Nebraska ball.
Nebraska ball.
Against Houston?
Well, they got to get by Texas A&M, and I think Texas A&M is—they can play.
Bubble team.
They had a pretty good SEC tournament, and they can score. But I think I'm going to take Nebraska ball coming out in that first round against Texas A&M, matching up against Houston. Very, very exciting. Ultimately, I think Houston's the pick here. But
I think Kentucky had a great draw, like an absolutely great draw. As you kind of match up now until they get to Houston, they have a cakewalk to the Elite Eight.
Houston's got to get healthy as well, but if they're at full strength, they're going to be tough to beat. By anybody, but I think you're right in terms of where you'd want to be.
I think Kentucky's
got to be feeling pretty good. All right, any upsets, dark horses? What's your thoughts on the South?
I do like Kentucky. I meant that when I said it for sure. Just one to pay attention to. NC State. They could beat Texas Tech. It's an 11 over 6. Not a huge upset. I'm not seeing any massive upsets here, though. That's the one thing. I'm not sure I'm with you on Duke. If you pick one, that's probably it. James Madison won 31 games over Wisconsin, though. Could be an interesting 12-5. We're going to see some 12-5 matchup upsets for sure.
All right. My only one that I want to throw out there in terms of you usually see this team that plays in the first four. So this could be, you know, completely gone in shortly.
Boise.
But Boise. I think Colorado.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I like Boise,
Colorado,
so here we go.
Colorado as being the team that gets through the first four, wins a game or two into the Sweet 16. You always see that.
Give me Boise State.
I think I'm going to take Colorado. Right. Colorado, what do you need? What do you need in March? You need lottery picks. So they've got KJ Simpson, who's going to be the highest American draft pick in this year's draft. KJ Simpson, they're going to beat Boise.
Underseeded.
In the first four. And then they, you know, if Tyler Colick's not playing against Marquette, beat them to go to the Sweet 16. Look out for Tad Boyle and the Colorado Buffaloes. All right, Kevin, we've got two more regions to get through. We're going to get through those. We're going to get to Brian Haney. We're going to close out with some more thoughts on Buckyball. The tournament's here, Kevin.
It's here.
Love it. All right, a lot more to come right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in, Jayhawk Talk Radio on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We are previewing the bracket. After get through a couple more regionals here, we'll have Brian Haney on. That'll be fun. Kind of hear his take on KU's draw. Let's go to the West Regional, Andrew. We've got North Carolina as the top seed. That fourth number one that snuck in over those pesky Iowa State Cyclones for that one line. That's what I kept hearing. We got the one seed North Carolina. The interesting matchup, potentially Elite Eight. Arizona is the two seed. Caleb Love, former UNC guy goes to Arizona. Could be kind of an interesting
revenge match. Game.
A little revenge match up there. What else do you see here in the West? What jumps out to you?
Every year, there is a regional that is could be described as the region of chaos, the region of anything could happen. And I would say 9 times out of 10, it always involves Baylor. Baylor is always in the region where it's like, I don't know, anything could happen. Because
sure.
I think that obviously North Carolina is the weakest number one. And they weren't necessarily considered a number one, really even in contention until recently. And then really didn't get that spot until Tennessee lost in the quarterfinal of the SEC tournament.
That's probably right.
So they are, like, I think it's, you know, it's those three number ones. Big gap than North Carolina. So I think the difference between, you know, Arizona and North Carolina and even Baylor, I think is pretty close. That being said, I think St. Mary's is interesting. I think Alabama is interesting. You know, Michigan State squeaks in and with a 9. We think squeaking in usually wouldn't be associated with a 9, but the 10 line is the play-in game. The first four. So Michigan State squeaks in with an, honestly, like the resume, 19-14 is interesting. That being said, you got to play the teams that are in front of you. And, you know, a Michigan State North Carolina second round matchup would not necessarily be a blowout for North Carolina. It would be interesting.
Michigan State's not winning. They're not getting past Mississippi State.
I don't know.
Mississippi State beat the ever living everything out of Tennessee in that game. Like, that is wild to me that they crushed them.
But they were the 8th seed in the SEC. I mean, they were in the 8th seed in the SEC
understand.
For a reason.
They have a really good defense. I think Michigan State's a fraud. I think Tom Izzo got in on name only. And I'm just saying, I like them to lose. They're going to lose.
But if we're talking about St. Mary's, I also want to talk about Grand Canyon.
Tyon Grant Foster.
Tyon Grant Foster, old friend. Played for the Jayhawks in 2021. He was a JUCO guy who had some minutes. You know, he did some things in spurts, but didn't necessarily have the year that he wanted. Transferred to DePaul, sat out a year last year, and ended up at Grand Canyon. With Bryce Drew. Bryce Drew's put together a pretty good resume.
Pretty good.
Going 29-4. So look out for Grand Canyon, potential
12-5. There's your 12-5.
I don't like picking at St. Mary's. I mean, they're not your traditional mid-major. I mean St. Mary's and Gonzaga have sort of transcended that. But if it was like Grand Canyon against, you know,
Wisconsin,
that would be even more interesting for me. So look out for Grand Canyon. Look out for Tyon Grant Foster. And honestly, look out for Baylor.
Okay. You like Baylor here? So who do you like to come out of the West Regional?
I think Arizona.
You like Arizona?
I think I like Arizona.
There you go. I like your chaos take. I'd love to see just a crazy name come out of here. Like a Mississippi State. I want the 8 seed to come out. But I'm with you. I think if I'm looking at this, honestly, I still like North Carolina.
Yeah, really?
That's what's sad about this.
Chaos,
like,
region.
I want chaos, and then I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm going to pick North Carolina.
Although, okay, let's jump a little bit further out. If there was a region to pick that would have the most upsets, I would probably lean towards the West.
Yeah, either that or the Midwest.
We'll get there.
I think I'd probably go Midwest because I don't trust Purdue. I don't trust Tennessee. I don't trust us all that much. I mean, I don't trust Gonzaga. There's a lot of teams I don't trust in the Midwest.
Well, let's get to the Midwest. Purdue's the number one. They've been, you know, flirting with the number one overall for a long time. They are obviously in the ballpark of Houston, in the ballpark of UConn. You know, Kansas is the number four against Samford. Just to go through it, you know, Tennessee's the two. Tennessee, you know, has played the Jayhawks back in November. And then Creighton's the three. I don't think I'm necessarily in a different year just seeing these teams. I wouldn't necessarily be all that scared.
No.
I think the only team that's
I'm not scared this year.
The only team that's going to beat the Kansas Jayhawks is the Kansas Jayhawks.
I think there's something to that. Purdue, Andrew, I mean, I'm just going to say it. They're not going to march to a title here. They haven't been to a Final Four since I've been alive. I've been alive a while. Since 1980, I believe that's right. Andrew, they've lost in the last three seasons. They've been pretty good teams. They've had good teams. Matt Painter's had good teams. They've lost to a 13 seed, a 15 seed, and a 16 seed. I mean, what is it about Purdue other than, you know, what we've seen in the regular season?
You know,
what gives you confidence?
We've had teams that have been one seeds that have lost 16 seeds. We've had that happen now.
Mm-hmm.
But no one's ever lost twice.
That's a good point. And then Tennessee, I mean, God love him, but Rick Barnes is 1-12 all-time in NCAA tournament games against better-seeded teams. 1-12. I'm just saying.
Like, that's crazy.
I don't know, man. It's kind of the old, like, you wake up in the morning, you see the newspaper, you pull up the front page. Can you envision Rick Barnes holding a regional trophy? Can you see it in your head? Can you play that tape forward and just see Rick Barnes there with a net around his neck after cutting it down?
I struggle.
I can't do it. I can't do it. Now, I'm not saying I see Kevin McCullough with it around his neck either, but I'm just saying, like, what about this region gives you like a ton of concern otherwise?
Other than the health
now
of this
that we've
team,
talked crap around the yeah, 1-2 seeds.
Other than the health of this team and the way this team is playing, you know, you take the Jayhawks out of the equation, I think it's manageable.
I think it's the easiest region. I think we got to put in the easiest region. I mean, the teams who are hot right now, who got you scared. You know, some of these other guys, obviously Houston is the one seed, all the other one seeds I would especially UConn, want to avoid. The twos, Give me Tennessee absolutely over Iowa State. Give me them over Arizona. The threes, I mean, you can talk about Creighton, but Creighton's had their lumps this year too. They've lost 9 games. I mean, this isn't like a world beater in Creighton in the 3 line. And I would say, I'd be more afraid of Illinois. I'd be more afraid of Baylor. I'd be more afraid of Kentucky. I think we got the easiest 3 seed too. I know that some people will disagree with that, but I'm just saying, like, you look down, there are not teams in here on the 6 line, on the 5 line that freak you out. It is. I think we got the best one.
Yeah, just in terms of the teams in front of you. I mean, let's look at the 5. So we've got Wisconsin, St. Mary's, San Diego State, and then Gonzaga. I think I'm okay with that.
Yep.
I mean, Gonzaga is not your typical Gonzaga. They've got some players, but, you know, they were flirting with bubble status, you know, mid-February. They're not the team that we're used to. There's no Drew Timmy coming through the door with his mustache on.
Now, to be fair, Gonzaga's thrilled with their matchup too.
Oh, sure.
Like they're looking at the 4 seed Kansas and going, oh, that's the best one I probably could have drawn.
If we're going to look ahead, I would probably say that Gonzaga's favored in that game.
Depends on what happens. If KU comes out and wins by double digits and we got McCuller and Hunt back, I think KU's favored. If one of them doesn't play, I agree with you.
All right, so Midwest. Kevin, I'm not asking you to stake your reputation on this. I'm not asking you to stake your Kansas fandom on this pick, but who comes out of the West, Midwest?
This is so hard because I don't trust any of these teams. Like, I don't – you're not looking down and just seeing a team that's like, that's the one. That's the one right there.
Is this the chaos?
This
regional?
Is the chaos. That's why I said when you said the chaos, I see the chaos here. There are a ton of potential upsets. I'm not confident in this by any means, but I would probably lean toward Tennessee if I had to take one. I don't think I trust Purdue. I don't know what it is about it, but I can't get there. Push come to shove, it'll probably be Purdue. But I don't know, man. I'm not going to do it. I'm going to say Tennessee. We're going to let Rick Barnes find a way. And I don't see Kansas there either. I'm not doing it. I know you're not that guy. You're a Kansas guy through and through. You're going to pick KU all the way here, aren't you?
Well, of course I am.
There you go.
If the Boilermakers were somehow get through the Kansas Jayhawks in the Sweet 16, I think I like them. I think I like them going to the title game.
All right. There you go. Over Houston.
Purdue over Houston. I think probably over Houston.
All right. I mean, I get it. Like, don't get me wrong. Purdue's been great. Like, they've been awesome all year. 29-4. They deserving of a 1 seed. They have beat up on a lot of teams. Like, they are really good. I just, prove it to me. Prove that you can win in the postseason. There's something different about that.
Going to be a lot of eyeballs on that Boilermaker team. Okay, we're going to turn our eyeballs, our earballs, back over to the Kansas Jayhawks and the Samford Bulldogs when we talk with voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, right after the break, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back in, Jayhawk Talk Radio, Sports Radio 810 WHB. We got about a half hour left here previewing the tournament, KU's draw, and who better, Andrew, to bring on than our old pal, Brian Haney. You know him as voice of the Jayhawks. Brian, what'd you do tonight? You been busy? You been doing anything tonight?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, even now in this role, there's a lot of post-bracket scrambling that takes place when you're trying to get the broadcast crew all accounted for with flights and hotels and all that stuff. 15 years ago when I was at KLWN, we had to trade out our hotels and find a sponsor for the gas in our car wherever we were driving to. It's a little nicer now in this role, but there's still a lot of hustle that goes into it, especially when you're not hooked up with regional pod seating like we are this year. But looking forward to SLC and hopefully some happier memories this time around than those we made 5 years ago losing to Auburn.
So what's your plan? What are you flying out?
Well, the team will fly out on Tuesday at some point. Still awaiting the details on that, but we're trying to get as many of our broadcasters out there before Thursday night as possible. So, yeah, the team will be out there, you know, with probably 56 hours in advance of tip-off and the chance to, you know, go through everything that comes with, you know, an NCAA tournament prep, from multiple practices in the home of the Jazz to, the pregame media stuff and all that that comes with it. So looking forward to a full week starting on Tuesday afternoon.
So let's not bury the lead here, Brian. What did you think of KU's draw?
I think the best way to describe it for me and most of my friends that I've talked to is don't hate it, don't necessarily love it. Obviously, a KU team that's vulnerable in defending the three-point arc draws the number 7 three-point shooting team in the country. That's going to catch your eye first and foremost. But they're also the 14th shortest team, 14th to last in terms of height in America out of 362 teams. And so, you know, if Kansas truly does have a healthy and effective Hunter Dickinson back, you'd like to be able to exploit that matchup a little bit too. So it's not a terrible draw by any means. Certainly, I'm well aware of how highly KenPom thinks of Gonzaga and what that could look like in the second round, if that's even our opponent in the second round. But the point is, I think there's fan bases out there that could be a lot more upset than Kansas in this particular bracket. If I was a Cyclone fan up in Ames and I woke up thinking I had a shot at a one seed, even though I know many, including you, Kevin, thought they did not, and you wind up not only on the two line, but in UConn's bracket, I'd be pretty up in arms. So I think it's a bracket that I'm perfectly fine with for Kansas. Most years, you're going to be kind of right down the middle, seeing some silver linings while also having some concerns. This is kind of one of those years, but I don't feel strongly either way. Certainly don't love it, but I absolutely think there's worse draws out there than the one we got.
Well, let's get into the Samford Bulldogs. We had on a Samford Bulldog insider early on, Brian, so you kind of walk through the way they like to play. In what Kevin and I sort of gleaned from this is that it probably looks a lot more like press Virginia under Bob Huggins than your traditional wait till the end of the shot clock and make a three-pointer. So what do you know about the Samford Bulldogs? And tell us kind of like I guess what you know, and then what's your preps going to be the next couple days?
Well, I'm going to start by listening to the interview you guys had because, honestly, the prep begins now. But I've read the general bullet points that most everybody has at this point about the depth that they have, the pace at which they play, and the threes that they launch and how efficient they are. But beyond that, it'll start with phone calls for their play-by-play guy tomorrow. We'll start listening in on their press conferences on Tuesday and Wednesday and get a chance to meet with some of the Samford players on Wednesday as well out there in Salt Lake. So pretty top of the first inning right now in terms of prep on them beyond the obvious shooting statistics and roster, you know, height and depth and all that. But looking forward to it. And once we get out there, we'll get a chance to explore a little bit more. But that was not a team that I had seen much, if any, of heading into the selection. And yet, certainly the first thing that pops up and stands out is their ability to beat you from deep. Exactly what we didn't want to see, and that would go for any year, not just a year where Kansas has been blitzed from three over the last 2 months. Any year when you're a heavily favored team in March, you worry about those David versus Goliath, swinging a stone, swinging it from three type matchups, and that's certainly the case here. It's a team that can catch fire and make it very difficult on you. But if I'm Kansas and I'm watching the selection show, and Seth Davis is already picking the upset and gushing about this team's three-point prowess, and Bill's been challenging you for 2 months about chasing guys off the line and doing a better job of containing three-point shooting teams, man, I've already got a chip on my shoulder if I'm Kevin McCullough or DeJuan Harris or anybody guarding the perimeter for Kansas. And now Bill's going to remind them of that even more. And maybe they play that clip of Seth Davis, who was so proud of that upset pick before any other upset pick was thrown out there. He was all over that one.
Yeah.
And I think that they use that as motivation over these next 72 hours in getting set to hold Samford much lower than their typical three-point output.
Well, you know, we've heard a lot from Bill Self over the past week talk about getting the swagger back. And it's kind of an interesting thing. I don't know, you've been around here, Brian, for a long time, too. You don't hear him talk about that a lot. It feels like he's kind of doing a little bit more of excuses for the team, kind of building up, trying to build up confidence, talking about getting swagger back. It's just an interesting observation I've had, you know, listening to Coach Self and especially in postseason and his pressers. What do you think there is to that? Is there something where, you know, he mentioned Hunter coming back would be a big piece of getting the swagger back. Is it just injuries, or is there more to it there?
I mean, I think it's a combination of a lot of things. And, you know, the only way to truly get the swagger back is to start beating teams and beating
would help.
Consistently and getting two or three in a row, you know, including at that point what would be a win over Purdue if you're talking about three in a row. I don't think you get your swagger back by, you know, hitting 18 out of 20 free throws at the end of practice. I don't think you get your swagger back by anything they're going to do in the next 3 days or have done for the last 7 days between their first-round exit in Kansas City and when they hop on the plane to Salt Lake City. I know he said they wanted to go home and go to practice and work on some of that, but let's call it like it is. I mean, Nick Timberlake had swagger in practice all year. Translating it to the games has been the challenge.
Yep.
So you can be swag-tastic when nobody's in the gym watching, but doing it when you got 18,000 bucks in the seats and your fate on the line is what really matters. And so to me, true swagger and confidence, or let's just call it momentum, can only be gained in the actual games themselves. And so if Kansas goes out there in a popular, trendy, upset pick matchup and beats Samford by double digits, not that they have to, I'd take a one-point win, survive in advance, right? But let's say they beat them more so, more convincingly so than people are giving them credit for, there's a couple swagger points. Then you go out there and you win the winner of the 5-12 game and you punch a ticket for the Sweet 16, something that we used to take for granted around here, but after three round of 32 exits, you know, going back to 2019, you know, we're a little uneasy with those round of 32 games, aren't we now? So you get that one, then you got a little more swagger. And now let's just say Purdue and the higher seeds do advance and you got Dak Eady standing across from you. You're still going to be counted out by everybody, but I think the swagger starts to build and the chip on the shoulder starts to build as everybody's talking about Eady over Dickinson and Purdue over Kansas. And then that's when the chest starts to puff out a little bit and you remind, you know, your fan base and we're reminded with the way they play that, hey, we're still Kansas, still self, still on the sidelines. I think Purdue's trying to get back to the Final Four for the first time since, what, 80?
Yep.
So it's definitely, you know, one of those moments. If Kansas can get to the second weekend where I think the swagger and the confidence and the, hey, don't sleep on Kansas, we're healthy again, self still here, that's when I think they start walking a little bit taller with the chest puffed out. But to do that, as Bill says, and it's cliche by now, but you got to go win that two-game tournament. You take them, you know, 1 week at a time, one game at a time, and if they can string together a couple, as elementary as that might sound or seem, it's so much tougher to actually do. If they do that, then I think we start to see some of the confidence and roll get back. And then, I promise you this, if it's Purdue versus Kansas and KU looks good in getting there and they look healthy, you're going to have all that talk of, well, hey, this was the preseason number one, you know, that suddenly is rounding into form. And you get all that talk of, these were the two teams that were supposed to meet in the Maui title game, and now they're meeting in the Sweet 16. And we're obviously getting way ahead of ourselves talking about that. But you asked, what would it take to get the swagger back? And I think the only way to do it is winning on the actual court, not in practice. And so hopefully that's what we see twice over in Salt Lake City, and then you really start to see that air of confidence return for Kansas.
So we know about Kevin McCullough. We know about Hunter Dickinson in terms of health. But who's another player who you think has to take it to another level if this team is going to make it to the Sweet 16?
That's a pretty easy answer. He's a guy that climbed as fast as I've seen anybody climb in the mock draft projections and then has plummeted pretty quickly after that meteoric rise, and that's Johnny Firpi. And yeah, I was stunned when The Athletic had him in the top 13 in one of their mock drafts about 5 weeks ago. I think the more reasonable, you know, sweet spot is some of the ESPN and CBS mocks that had him in the 22 to 28 range. But I mean, this is a guy who went from 7th on our roster to, according to The Athletic, 13th in the world in terms of NBA draft projection and all that stuff. And I understand it's a weak draft, and I understand that mock drafts in January are like throwing darts with a blindfold on. So come on. You know, we can't put too much stock in those. But my point is, there was a time over his first 7 games as a starter when he was cooking, man, and he was averaging 15-7, shooting 48% from 3, and he was one of the hottest stories not just in the Big 12 but in the country. Then Kevin starts to miss games, and Johnny becomes more of a focal point of opponent defenses. He starts going up against the best perimeter defender or small forward defender on the other team, and life gets a little tougher. And obviously the performance he had in Kansas City, going 1 of 8 with his family and friends, you know, in the stands, and a lot more opportunity in front of him to be the alpha with Kevin and Hunter out, that was not what anybody expected. But with those guys returning, there'll still be plenty of focus on him, don't get me wrong, but hopefully that killer instinct that we saw, you know, really emerge in mid to late January returns. Hopefully the three-point stroke returns, and he gets back to being a game-changing player for Kansas, who's not only scoring for you, but coming up with extra possessions with that great attacking of the offensive glass, soaring in at 6'9 with those long arms. I think in this matchup in particular, there's some places where he can expose or exploit undersized Stanford players on the offensive glass. And so maybe Johnny Furphy's that guy. And obviously, you know, we're all hopeful that Nick or El Marco give you something off the bench. But at this point, I referenced throwing darts blindfolded. But at this point, it would just be a, you know, guess as to whether or not it's going to be the on version of Timberlake that we saw on senior night that hit 4 or 5 from three and knocked down 18 points, or a guy that clearly was pressing on Wednesday in Kansas City and missed off the side and top of the backboard. You know, I'm a huge Nick Timberlake fan, and I really want to see it click for him. But at this point, we're 4 months deep of seeing a lot of inconsistencies. So your guess is as good as mine as to which Nick it's going to be. But they got to have some kind of scoring punch if they're going to win 4 in March, let alone 6. If they're going to win 2 this first weekend and make it to the Sweet 16, you're going to need some kind of punch off the bench. And so hopefully we get that. And even though El Marco's line is not efficient versus the Cincinnati Bearcats, I think there were a couple of the contributions, most notably the big dunk, that hopefully give him a little bit of confidence heading into this week as well. But they're going to need something there, because while we still feel like we've got as good a starting five as anybody, if those guys truly come back fully healthy, truly to win it all, a threat to go to the Final Four, compete to go to the Final Four, you're going to need some kind of spark. And I'm not asking for Remy Martin or Malik Newman type contributions, but you know, can Nick and El Marco just give us a little something along the way? That would certainly go a long ways for Kansas's tourney hopes.
I read a stat, Brian, that KU has had a consecutive streak of getting a top four seed in the NCAA tournament of 23 straight years. The next best is 4. And you look around and you hear a lot about KU fans being sort of upset about this year. I'm usually a pretty big perspective guy when we're thinking about Kansas on the whole. I think maybe that's something I try to bring to the table. That doesn't mean I don't scream at my television. But I think one of the things that people are talking about right now, which is a little different, is expectations. You ask around, I think a lot of people would be pretty happy with that Sweet 16 you mentioned, going to win those two first games, and then you hear house money after that. Where do you stand on what would be considered a successful postseason run for Kansas? Setting aside what all has happened with injuries and also perhaps setting aside preseason expectations. Where are you at on that?
Well, first off, tremendous nugget about 23 straight of a 4-seed or higher. I mean, that's just astounding. So that's Bill Self's 21 seasons, and then, you know, Roy took us to the Final Four each of his last 2 years before leaving for North Carolina. That's incredible. To think about, you know, other teams that we're being compared with that have either missed the tournament entirely in those 23 years or fallen to a 7 or an 8 seed, something like that. I remember the Kentucky Wildcats, after a historically great season in 2014, were in the NIT the next year, I believe it was. So, you know, it's just wild to think about the model of consistency that we've had under Bill Self, and we should just absolutely marvel at that and think, how lucky are we? Because that means not only are you in it every year, but you have the expectation to make some noise and the optimism, you know, to truly be a team that could make a run. Now, sadly, as I've referenced, you know, 3 times since 2019, we've been out in the second round. And if that happens for a 4th time in that span, I think you've got genuine disappointment. And this season falls well short of what we were all, you know, dreaming of back in the preseason when they were preseason number 1. You know, obviously a lot transpired from the preseason expectations when this roster was first assembled in the spring of last year and had Arturo Morris on it and had probably a higher ceiling for Hunter Dickinson, even though his 18-11 proved to be a very good year and a second-team All-American type year. I think some people thought he would come in and just be this dominator that he's been close to, but not consistently all the way to that degree. And then we all thought Nick Timberlake would bring more. We thought Omarco Jackson would do more. Nobody thought, realistically, that you were just going to plug in one McDonald's All-American for another and get Grady Dick-like production out of Omarco. We knew Jackson was a little bit more work in progress. He'd only been playing organized basketball for 4.5 years. And so people in the know were a little more sensible with that. But it's fair to say it's been a disappointing first year for him, no doubt, even with lower expectations than the typical McDonald's All-American. But my point is, when the bar is set so high in the preseason, you go out anywhere short of the Sweet 16, it's a disappointing year. And you could argue one of the most disappointing in the 21 years that we've had, just because this team had such a high level of expectation in the preseason compared to some of those teams like 2019 and 2021 that were early exits. Last year, obviously, was tremendously disappointing to go out in the round of 32, but you understood it with Bill Self not being on the sidelines, and obviously Arkansas had two first-round picks, and it made a lot of sense. This particular team, though, I think you got to make it to the Sweet 16, and it's crazy to think that if you make it just to that point, as you said, house money, you feel like, okay, anything from here is gravy. But anything short of that point feels like a pretty tremendous disappointment based on what could have been. I think everybody would understand it at this point based on how inconsistent this team has been, and they wouldn't be surprised if they went out prior to the Sweet 16. But I think the level of letdown would be right up there, you know, amongst the bigger ones we've had in 21 years of getting to go every year as a fourth seed or higher under Self, just based on where the expectations were back in October. So that's where I sit on it. I think these first two games are so important. And then let come what may with Kansas and potentially Purdue after that. I hope we get the Dickinson-Edie matchup that we were hoping for in November out in Honolulu that never came to pass. I hope we get it this time around, because then whatever happens, you know, at least we got to see Kansas be beat by one of the best. And if you take down Purdue, should they make it that far? Then we're talking about really with house money at that point, because you've delivered, you know, an Elite Eight run that by any estimation is a great, great season. I think that there's only a handful of times when the Elite Eight would truly be deemed a disappointment, one of which was in 2017 when we lost in Kansas City and had the National Player of the Year and the number 3 pick in the draft and all that. But I think with this particular team, if they got past the Sweet 16, knowing everything they'd been through with injury and inconsistency, you'd have to feel like that was a winning season and a very successful one at that.
Hey, Brian, have a good call on Thursday. Looks like 8:55 Central. You got some time to prepare. Good luck pronouncing Acor, Australian big man. I think that's what it was.
It was very good, Andrew.
Anyway, we're all going to be listening to you, watching the Jayhawks on Thursday, and then come what may. I think that this team could go out in the first round, but it could do something pretty special. But we'll see that. But, Brian,
you never know.
Appreciate you being on, and have a good call.
Thanks, Brian.
All right, we're going to take a quick we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to close it out right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Closing out here on Jayhawk Talk Radio. We got us a bracket. We are the 4 seed. We're playing the Samford Bulldogs. That's what we know.
Buckyball.
It'll be an interesting first round matchup. I think a lot of folks are probably a little too down on the Hawks. I think it will be a very trendy pick to pick against the Hawks. But I think it's time, Andrew, for you and I to make our picks, not only about the Samford game, but also how far do you think Kansas is going to make it? Will we be back in studio next week talking about how the Hawks are Sweet 16 bound and got house money? Or will we be in studio talking about our expectations? Clearly we're not met for this season.
I think we'll be here.
Okay.
And I think if we're here, all bets are off. And I think that if you're in the top 16, you know, Brian talks about that. That's the narrative starts to come up. Well, this team was the team that was the, you know, number one overall to begin the season in terms of, you know, preseason ranking to that matters. The talent's there. The top five are there if they're healthy. And in the tournament, you can go a long way with that. I mean, we went through this whole show, Kevin, without talking about Johnny Furphy. It's Johnny Furphy's time. It's Furphy time.
I can't wait if it's Furphy time. If it's Furphy time, I can't wait. I'm ready for Furphy time. It's been a while, by the way, since it's been Furphy time.
Yeah, it's like mid-January was Furphy time.
We need Timberlake time. We need Furphy time. We need Swagger Hunt back. We need all
these November
things.
McCullough. No one November talks about McCullough. November McCullough. If we get November McCullough, December McCullough, even January McCullough.
I would take January McCullough. That's what we need. We just need all those things. That's all we need. That's all we need. Just those things.
I think we're good.
All right.
I'm in. I think we'll be here.
Okay. I have KU winning for the record in the first game.
Of course. I think if you want a good bet, a good, you know, take those points. I mean, you know, it's going to be 6.5 maybe.
You like KU? Yeah. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I don't know about all that, but I like KU. And then who do they play if they do win? Who do they play?
The Zags.
They play the Zags?
Another Bulldog.
And we beat the Zags?
Yes.
So we go Bulldog
Boilermaker.
To potentially face a Boilermaker.
Bulldog Boilermaker. There was a time when the Kansas Jacks were scared of the B teams, the Killer
Bees. That's a good point.
No longer.
All right. You heard it here first. Jayhawk Talk Radio says we'll be back next week talking about a Sweet 16. That's what we're going to be. Here's hoping, Andrew. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. Thank you to our guy, Grant, from, what was it? It was Sanford Scoop.
Sanford Scoop.
From the Sanford Scoop. Thank you, Grant, for the Sanford Scoop. No one else got the Sanford Scoop on tonight. Thank you to our guy, Brian Haney. We appreciate you for coming on as well. Have a great call. And all of you out there, make sure you're taking off Thursday and Friday. What are we doing? Make sure you're taking it off. Don't let work get in the way of March Madness. That's the advice. How many March Madnesses do you get in your life? You work all the time. Take it off. Enjoy your time. And hopefully we'll be back here next week talking Jayhawks and the Sweet 16. Until then, rock chalk, everybody. We at the top of the top, just like we should be. Started from the bottom, thanks to what James could see.